every Thursday.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Noel Show. And now, your host, Gary Noel.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Noel. This is the radio program that empowers people, providing different insights and a sense of reason and empathy for why we should care about those who have less, who are being oppressed, to help end both the emotional and physical violence. We did cover all this. Today, we're going to do all that. We're going to begin with a greater magnesium intake is associated with a lower risk of fatal heart disease, such as cardiac death. Brown University Medical School, published in the Journal of Women's Health. Then we're going to have several videos, including all of these are open for you to call in and share your points of view on the video. A 60-minute interview of George Soros, and he was happy, you know, in his regard for how he made his money. I'm only going to play a small part of the clip, up to where he makes a statement that tells us everything that we need to know about George Soros. And therefore, when you accept money from a person who has made billions by causing other people to suffer, what moral responsibility do you have for accepting his money, if any? It'll be your opportunity to talk back. I found a rare clip of a pediatric nurse who actually has left nursing after seeing hundreds of vaccine side effects firsthand. It's a short interview, but she should be speaking on behalf of all nurses. Unfortunately, she's only speaking on behalf of herself. Why is it that other nurses are not coming forward, protesting, standing up for the patient, talking back to the medical establishment? That would empower them. There's a culture of sexism, misogyny within the hierarchical structure of medicine in and of itself. But this is dealing with people who see people's bodies being abused and do nothing about it. You'll have a chance to talk back. I'm looking, going into the new year, at what I see as a crisis in our classrooms. Everything from the type of curriculum that teachers are told they must use to the administrators who are these parasites and just gorging themselves at the cost of having the teacher understand it's their classroom, they spent their life there, they know what they're doing, and not the parents, and certainly not the children. Everything is wrong with the educational system today at every level. We're going to give you an example, an investigative reporting piece out of Oregon. They invited all the teachers who wanted to come from all the school districts into a meeting. There's no rehearsing. Hear what they have to say, what it's like to be a teacher for young kids. And then all of us at some point in our life have met the bureaucrat, the mindless, unthinking, uncaring, insensitive individual who cannot be fired no matter what their crime against you might be. Look at police officers as the example of that, but also look at government bureaucrats. When was the last time anyone at the FBI, the CIA, Homeland Security, the ICE, and National Security Agency were held accountable, lost their job, and went to jail? Name me the person. You can't. Because that's not how it works. But the whistleblowers who expose their corruption, yeah, they go to jail. Thank you, Barack Obama, being the worst president in American history, for putting more whistleblowers who brought forth the truth about corruption in your administration and your agencies, and you shut them up, shut down their lives, embarrass them, ridicule them, and then destroy their life by putting them in prison. What kind of system is that? Look beyond your identity politics to see the truth on any of these issues. But here we have a tax collector, and he's threatening a couple to pay previous owners property taxes or lose their home. So you buy a home, clear title, clean title. You own the home, And now the city says, no, 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 you owe us the taxes for the last person that owned this house. That's the typical mind of bureaucracies everywhere in America. Everywhere. Especially states like California, New York, and New Jersey. They're really bad when it comes to how they deal with people, even when they're on the wrong side of an issue. But this time, an investigative journalist working for a local television station called out the tax collector. Again, you'll have a chance to share your points of view. Our talkback number is 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. And then we're going to finish off our program today with Gerald Salante, one of the finest minds in the United States and around the world, because he looks at trends, and he's been very accurate. He's up at the Trends Research Institute in Kingston, New York. He publishes the Trends Journal, and he's going to tell us about what he sees for 2020. That's our show today. We begin always with the latest on health and healing. An article published just 2 weeks ago in the Journal of Women's Health revealed the findings of Brown University's medical school on the lower risk of fatal coronary heart disease and sudden cardiac death among women who had a higher intake of the mineral magnesium. There were 153,569 postmenopausal women who enrolled in the Women's Health Initiative between 1993 and 98. And they filled out questionnaires about their diet and how much magnesium they took. And deaths from fatal coronary heart disease and sudden cardiac death were documented during an average of 10 years of a follow-up. And here's what it says. There's an inverse relationship observed between increasing magnesium intake and decreasing incidence of death from fatal coronary heart disease and sudden cardiac death, a heart attack. In fact, women who were among the lowest 25% of magnesium consumers at about 189 milligrams per day had nearly a 20% greater fully adjusted risk of dying from coronary heart disease and a 24% greater risk of dying from sudden cardiac death. And by the way, there's a big difference between how women and men have heart attacks. With women, there's no symptoms frequently, no pain, no shortness of breath, no pain coming down the side of the neck and across the chest. You just die. So if we can save one woman's life by telling you you've got to have your blood chemistry checked to see how much magnesium you have, and if you don't have enough, take it. Take 1,000 milligrams a day of magnesium, 1,000 milligrams of calcium from citrate. Can traditional Chinese medicine and Western medicine team up, work together to beat lung cancer? From Changgung University in Taiwan, it says yes. Western medicine relies heavily upon the use of modern drugs. Some are good, some save lives, we all know that, and some are terrible and cause injury or death. In fact, they're a leading cause of death, and then you have medical errors on top of that. But when you have the undesirable side effects, understand we should not be using the words side effects. These are the effects. On the other hand, traditional Chinese medicine makes use of medicinal plants and natural healing practices to address minor and major serious illnesses. And there's a growing interest in the resurgence of traditional Chinese medicine use now that the historical usages over the last 5,000 years can be brought into modern science and laboratories and studies to see, does it really work? We're told it works. It's written in the different textbooks, but how do we know those are accurate? And they're finding out most of them are accurately describe what they do. This article, by the way, was published in the Peer Review Journal of Alternative and Complementary Medicine, and they said, yes, they should be used together. In fact, in one case, the two together work more effectively against lung cancer. And this was, according to the American Cancer Society, 13% of new cancer cases reported each year turn out to be lung cancer. Now, in a longitudinal study, they found that when you're using Western medicine and traditional Chinese medicine, you get a greater outcome. Just want to share that with you. Astragalus, that's big. American silver top root. Licorice root. Poria mushrooms, that's P-O-R-I-A. Wild hedotis, H-E-D-Y-O-T-I-S. All of those are used in traditional Chinese medicine for relieving pain, improving quality of life in cancer patients. And when used as anti-inflammatories and anti-cancer and anti-tumor and anti-metastatic and antioxidant properties, they enhance a person's chance of living. And that's just with lung cancer. As many of you who've listened to this program for any period of time know, I'm an advocate of exercising vigorously. According to the Mayo Clinic proceedings, they were looking at the German Center for Neurodegenerative Disease with a new evidence-based article between cardiorespiratory fitness and brain health, in particular in gray matter and total brain volume. By the way, those are regions of the brain involved with cognitive decline and aging. And they're suggesting that cardiorespiratory exercise like power walking, running, biking, really get your heart pumping. And that's really good for your body. But it also can help you slow down cognitive changes in the brain. Just a brief little classroom on the air for you. Your brain tissue is made up of gray matter, or cell bodies, and filaments called white matter that extend from the cells. Now, the volume of gray matter appears to correlate with various skills and cognitive abilities. The researchers found that increases in peak oxygen uptake were strongly associated with increased gray matter volume. So that's why exercising, you're breathing deeper. You're getting more oxygen into the system, and that's terrific. Dr. Ronald Peterson, MD, PhD at the Mayo Clinic, he's a neurologist, helped provide great insight into the importance of exercise, and especially after the age, let's say, of 40. So do your exercise. Don't sit all the time. It's not good for you. Also, scientists at King's College London investigated resveratrol, three syllables, for its anti-hypertension properties. Now, according to King's College London, they've uncovered many other health benefits of resveratrol. And by the way, the last time I looked, there were over 12,000 studies in the peer-reviewed literature on resveratrol. Grapes, and grape seeds, grape juice, grape concentrate, grape powder, that's where you get your resveratrol in big amounts. Not in red wine. Yes, you will get resveratrol in red wine, yes. But you're getting a tiny amount compared to what your body can really benefit from. So drink some fresh grape juice. Make it yourself. Or eat grapes. Skin and seeded grapes are the best. And if you worry about them getting tucked into the gums and with dentures, etc., throw them in a blender. Blend them as a smoothie. And you can throw other seeded items, berries in there, like raspberries, blackberries, strawberries. They're all good. But what it does, it strengthens our cardiovascular system. So if you have any problem with your cardiovascular system, one way to help yourself is resveratrol, because resveratrol is shown to protect the heart from cardiovascular problems. And that's a very important thing. It also is one of the best antioxidants and that we can take in, and it can help mediate lowering your blood pressure. So that's important. It's a great way to neutralize oxidants. And by the way, oxidative stress is one of the primary reasons that your cells become damaged because of the oxygenation of those cells. Cigarette smoking. Remember in the 19, for those of you who are baby boomers, as I am, in the 1960s, 70s, 80s where so many people smoked and drank, and their pores were always enlarged. They had these kind of bulbous effects. They had this ruddy complexion. That's oxidative stress. That's cell damage from the alcohol and from the smoking. That's oxidative stress in a bad way. So have more berries in your life every day, and that's terrific. By the way, you would have to drink 1,000 bottles of red wine to achieve the same body-to-weight dosage that you would get if you just took resveratrol, you know, as a supplement. I mean, you're not getting very much in the red wine. I want to emphasize that. From Hong Kong Polytech University comes a good study. It deals with depression. Now, we all know, and according to Hong Kong Polytech University, depression is one of the greatest health concerns affecting somewhere over 350 million people globally. So along comes aromatherapy. It's very popular and complementary in alternative medicine as an intervention, and it's generally the way that you can help a lot of people with depression. It's one of the pieces of that puzzle. And it can help alleviate depressive symptoms, and an in-depth evaluation of the evidence-based clinical efficacy of aromatherapy is needed. And they did this, and they found that yes, there was a systematic review of all the literature, and it does make a difference. Just like putting like 3 drops of lavender oil on your pillow as you go to bed will help you sleep better. Yeah, aromatherapy is good. Also from the Universities of Georgia and Mississippi comes a study published in the Journal of Natural Products that cranberries, or more of a carbohydrate inside the cranberry, can help you with UTIs. UTIs, by the way, are urinary tract infections, which are epidemic in the United States. And nearly every human study that investigated this has confirmed that drinking cranberry juice unsweetened helps stop urinary tract infections from reoccurring. I would do a little more, though. I would suggest that you use the unsweetened cranberry juice concentrate, then add to that bee propolis, olive leaf extract, pau d'arco, and a ginger juice. That works the best I've found from my own experience. And one last thing, why you can no longer ignore the most potent way to transform your life. This is a study from the University of Pennsylvania published in the New England Journal of Medicine, and they suggest leveraging existing relationships with friends and family may be a more effective way to improve patient health and encourage new healthy habits and behaviors than increasing interactions with physicians. Meaning, in just lay language, what you should do is we put so much emphasis upon things versus people. We've forgotten how to connect with others to improve our health. Going out for a workout together, having a buddy system that can help you, it makes a big difference because one will motivate the other. So try to find a support system for maintaining your health, and it can make a big difference. That's the latest on health and healing. Oh, and by the way, coconut oil was proven beneficial for healing rheumatoid arthritis and other autoimmune diseases, according to St. Thomas College of Medicine in India. But you already knew that, because I've mentioned the power of coconut oil as being a strong anti-inflammatory, including the anti-inflammatory ability of coconut oil with arthritis. So it's good to know that science is finally catching up, and that's helping us. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to go directly into the 60 Minutes interview. It's about a 3-minute clip to where he says something that's important, and we're going to stop it. Then if you would like to respond to this, then you can call 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Back in a moment.
I've heard people say that too much of anything is not good for you, baby. But I don't know about that. As many times as we've loved and we've shared love and made love, it doesn't seem to me like it's enough. It's just not enough, baby. It's just not enough.
Oh, oh, man. But you went out with this protector of yours who swore that you were his adopted godson.
Yes.
Went out, in fact, and helped in the confiscation of property from the Jews.
That's right. Yes.
I mean, that sounds like an experience that would send lots of people to the psychiatric couch for many, many years. Was it difficult?
Not at all. Not at all.
Of all the financial titans and philanthropists of the 20th century, none are more complex or mysterious than George Soros. Like Carnegie, J.P. Morgan, and the Rockefellers, he amassed billions through ruthless business decisions, only to turn around and give away most of his fortune to advance his own personal philosophy. He can move world financial markets simply by voicing an opinion, or destabilize a government by buying and selling its currency. He also pledged more aid last year to help people in Russia than the U.S. government did. But now George Soros is worried. He thinks the global economy is coming apart at the seams, and that the world needs to be protected from people like George Soros.
We may now think that everything is fine, but the fact is that the system is broke and it needs fixing.
What you're doing is asking some form of regulation to protect the world against you.
Well, I am a player, and I think all players should be regulated. There have to be rules of the game.
I take 81,000 to buy 48,000. Buy him 69,000 YUM.
Right now, his Quantum Group hedge fund moves $14 billion of rich investors' money around the world every day, looking for profits and answering to no one. Soros makes huge bets on whole countries and economies. Last year, when he saw cracks in the Asia boom, he began selling the currency in Thailand. Traders in Hong Kong followed suit, triggering a financial crisis that plunged much of Asia into a depression.
In the last 2 years, you've been blamed for financial collapse of Thailand, Malaysia, Indonesia, Japan, and Russia.
All of the above.
Yeah. Are you that powerful?
No, I think there's a great misunderstanding.
The Prime Minister of Malaysia,
yes,
said that the region spent 40 years trying to build up its economy, and along comes a moron like Soros, right, with a lot of money, and it's all over. He called you a criminal.
It's easier for him to blame an outside force than to admit that they were mismanaging their economy and their currency. The French finance minister talked about hanging speculators from lampposts.
Soros says the Asian currencies would have collapsed even if he hadn't been in the market. They were overvalued. He says people tend to follow his lead because he's been so successful.
I think that I've been blamed for everything. I am basically there to make money. I cannot and do not look at the social consequences of what I do.
This man is...
Hold on. Now listen what he just said. I cannot and do not look at the social consequences of how he makes his money. And he's in it for the money. What if you were one of the 120 million Russians that were adversely affected when he played the ruble or the peso? Think of all the people who were using the peso in Mexico and other countries that suddenly, for all intents and purposes, have no value in their own currency. So here's the issue. Multiple organizations, 100-plus organizations today, that are engaged in social manipulation, identity politics, are funded by George Soros, including broadcasters on Pacifica who receive money and support from George Soros. George Soros is a player today. What does it say about a person who says, How I make my money is my business, and it doesn't bother me how I make my money. Okay. But what about how it adversely affects other people by the tens, hundreds of millions of other people? It doesn't matter. So if hundreds of millions of people who are already poor have to suffer more so he becomes even wealthier, so he can then social engineer what he sees as what he wants as a body politics, then that's his business. Wow. What do you think? I'll hold off any further on that. I'd like to hear your thoughts, because an awful lot of what goes on with Soros' money. And it's mainly the left and liberal community. I would say the same thing against the Koch brothers and other people who hold a neoliberal point of view and who fund groups and people take the money, politicians take the money, without thinking, how did these people make their money? What is their ultimate ideological or political or economic agenda? Because they wouldn't be giving money and forming groups if they didn't have one. So both left and right are guilty of this. And yet everybody's got their hand out and no one's willing to say, no, I don't want your money. That money comes from hurting people. And I can't be a part of that. Oh, but we don't want to deal with the ethics of that in our society. Shame on people for that. We should be concerned. And we're not. 888-874-4888, if you have a thought on that. Now, here's a pediatric nurse telling you what she saw firsthand and why it has nothing to do with the reality of what we're told about the safety of vaccines.
Hi, everyone. I am live in Costa Mesa. We had a very powerful event, strategy events. Maybe some of you watched the video. And here in Costa Mesa, I have heard so many stories of parents and people who've been injured, people who've seen injuries, and I wanted to get some of these stories out there. So I met a woman named Galen, who I'm going to put on the camera in a second, and she was a pediatric nurse for 10 years, and she said she saw every vaccine injury and side effect that's on the labels repeatedly. And she has some... There's an airplane. And she has some amazingly sad but impactful stories that I think you should hear. So I'm going to turn this around. Oops, sorry, I didn't mean to push that button. So what was your wake-up moment? You said you left nursing because of vaccines. What was your wake-up moment?
So my wake-up moment was 3 years into my career, started kind of questioning everything, but you're basically silenced when you swim upstream. And I had a patient who was 18, and she received a flu shot, and she developed a paralyzing disorder called Guillain-Barré syndrome. And I had no idea, I was never taught that this was something that could happen from a flu shot. And I just watched the downfall of this patient, and it took her 7 months to be able to walk again, and she never walked normally again. She walks with a very severe gait, and it was from one shot. I couldn't believe it.
So you said you saw lots of injuries on a regular billboard, or I'm sorry, someone put billboard in the comments, on a regular basis. And
yes.
You had mentioned 10 cases of paralysis
yes.
after vaccines
so,
that you saw.
Yes, so in the 5 years that I started looking and really, really digging for information, I met 9 other patients that developed this paralyzing disorder from the flu shot. You know, and we're told, oh, that's 1 in a million, that's not common. Now, I've only worked in 2 areas in my nursing career, and that is in the Inland Empire and in Orange County. And in those 2 areas in 5 years, I personally met 10 patients who developed this paralyzing disorder. So it makes you want to know, like, how, you know, it's actually more common than they let you think it is, you know.
Right. Way more common.
Way more common, yes.
And if you imagine how many nurses are out there and how many hospitals and
yes.
and emergency rooms and all of that.
Absolutely.
I mean, and you were only in the pediatric division. There are a lot of cases of paralysis after flu shots.
Absolutely.
In adults.
Yep.
And even death.
Absolutely.
Death.
Yep. And I had 3 different patients that I can remember who claimed that their family members had died post-flu shot.
Wow.
You know, and I honestly can't remember the number of how many parents I spoke to who claimed their kids passed away after flu shots, some of them, or shots in general. And, you know, some of them even were diagnosed by a doctor, like, yeah, that was from the shots, you know. That's terrible. I mean, every reaction you can name under the sun, I've seen more than once. I've seen in my career thousands of kids, and I mean, it's literally everything. Swelling of the brain, loss of speech, loss of use of limbs, seizures, gut issues. I mean, name it. I even had, and I will never ever forget the guilt I felt after this, I gave a DTaP shot to a five-year-old. And she developed early onset menopause at five. Now, I gave her the shot, you know, and the guilt I felt after that, she will never, ever have kids. How do you explain that to a kid? How do you explain that? You know, and it's just, it's awful.
And actually, that's interesting, a story that you share, because just last week, some stories came out about the declining fertility rate in the U.S., and it is shocking doctors and scientists, and nobody has any idea what it's related to, and yet there are hundreds of studies showing the link between fertility issues, early
Correct.
Onset of menopause, ovarian failure,
Absolutely.
All of these type of things after vaccines. And it's not just one vaccine. The HPV is a culprit of this, but
Absolutely.
It's also other vaccines as well. And you know, the pieces are right there, but nobody wants to put them together, especially because the medical system and the pharmaceutical industry together, they are definitely the most
powerful
in the world.
So something that I will tell you that will probably shock or not shock whoever's listening is that as a medical professional, I was never trained in the side effects of vaccines. I was only ever trained, this is what you give, this is when, and this is why. I was never told why not, or this case of patients can't handle these. I never knew. Only when I saw reactions did I start looking myself and reading the vaccine inserts. Now, I had no idea, you know, vaccines had mercury and aluminum and formaldehyde and lead. I didn't know that, you know. I just thought these are good for you, because that's what I was told. And it was a sad day when I realized that everything that I was doing, that I thought was doing to help patients, I was actually hurting them. And that's why I left. I could no longer be responsible.
Good for her. By the way, the other woman is also a nurse, and she also is spreading the word. But we have hundreds of thousands of nurses who are still giving the shots. They're working in an environment where they also see this. This is not something that only a handful of nurses see. People see it all the time. It's time we spoke up. What is the ultimate outcome? The ultimate outcome is only going to change when we as a society, at least 3.5%, that's how much it takes to have a movement impact at a national level, demand our legislators rescind the 1986 vaccine identification law that allows vaccine makers not to be held legally accountable for how bad their vaccines are, no matter how many they kill or injure, because right now the government gives our money to vaccine makers to develop a vaccine. The CDC owns the patent on them, then licenses it back to the manufacturer. So in effect, the manufacturer has no financial incentives to do real research, no legal incentives to do it cautiously or carefully, and they profit by the tunes of tens of billions of dollars a year. So that's what we need. We have plenty of articles. Richard Gale and I have written over 47 really good articles, fully documented, fully legally vetted, and also vetted for accuracy and scholarship, showing you the dangers of vaccines, the lack of science and efficacy. And we need now to get all this information to legislators and then let them know we've got to do demonstrations in Washington. I suggest that we get a group of nurses together and physicians and have a national march on Washington to rescind vaccine indemnification. If we do that, then the makers are held personally responsible. Then you'll stop seeing mandatory vaccines and dangerous vaccines, and they're all dangerous. Before we go to our guest, and before we go to a classroom in crisis and outbursts, by the way, which I also believe are due a lot to bad parenting and the side effects of vaccines, I want you to say hello to Jay, Jim, and Chris, who are on the line now to talk about George Soros and his comment on 60 Minutes that he doesn't think about, isn't bothered by, doesn't care about the consequences of how he makes his money and what it does to the people where he's made it from. Jay, we start with you in New York City. Your turn.
Hi, Gary. I come from an interesting balance on the subject. For 13 years, I was a Wall Street broker at a top firm. I traded commodities, currencies, things like that. And these days, for the last 13 years, I've been a Buddhist. So the point is that while George Soros was the one on 60 Minutes, the bigger picture is this. As we know, there's countless hedge funds like his. There's countless pension funds around the country and around the world. There's all kinds of other money managers, mutual funds, and exchange-traded funds. But the point is, what he said was that the situation was not his creation. It was a matter of those countries being mismanaged and overvalued. So that on one hand, he's right about that, yes. Did the impact of what he did cause hardship? If one money manager did not do it like George Soros, the others would. They all do it. So I'm not saying that it's what they're doing is not a good thing, but it's understanding the bigger picture that it's a whole culture of money management. It's the guys on Park Avenue that run BlackRock and Blackstone. They're all part of this thing. On the other hand, trading is about seeking balance in one way or another. If something's overvalued, then balance would mean to do something undervalued. What I mean by that is if these companies are doing this, there should be pressure on them. If they're making money from this and their clients are making money, instead, they should be doing something to help offset via nonprofit contributions, perhaps, to which I guess is what
Jay
is doing.
Jay, you got to do some more meditating in your Buddhist classes, friend. Sorry, but I do not accept what you just said. In the latter part, I do appreciate that you have come forward with your experience, and you are right. But you will never, ever see anyone on Wall Street, hedge funds, especially equity partners, saying, we just bought like Bain Capital, Mitt Romney's little cesspool. You will never see them saying, you know, we bought a company that was poorly run or bought a company that had no debt, and now we control it, and we're going to take every penny that is possible out of that. We won't leave one drop of juice in that orange. It'll mean firing all the people, taking the brand over to China or India and have the product made there dirt cheap with exploited labor and brought back in the United States. But everyone in our group is going to profit from it. And, okay, maybe we caused 40 million Americans in the last 40 years to suffer because of equity partnership acquisitions and corporate rating. But we're going to make sure that next week we're sending a check absolutely positively for 27 cents to the American Cancer Society. No, don't tell me that someone, it's an insult to my intelligence and this listenership, that somehow you can be a complete predatory asshole stealing from people, exploiting people, causing people misery and deprivation, but because you may give something back in return, you create a balance, as you said. I'm sorry, that's where you and I would share a difference of opinion. I appreciate you sharing your honesty with us, though, but that doesn't mean because it's honest, it is accurate. Thank you, Jay. Jim from Pennsylvania. Jim, your turn.
Good afternoon, Gary. Thank you. So I come from a completely different outlook as the last caller. I live in small town USA. I do think, however, part of it is as a people, our society is somewhat responsible for creating the Soroses and the like of the world, because we should be responsible in how we spend our money. We could refuse their products and services. You know, I mean, I personally like to shop local as much as I can, and I know it costs me a little bit more, but it gives to the community I live in, so that return is a lot greater in the quality of life in the surrounding area. That's my opinion. I refuse to buy anything.
Jim, let's break down what you just said. You've made several salient points that should be discussed. Point one, you talked about supporting a local economy. That means that you could buy things at a local farmer's market. Do you support things that are made, even small vendors making clothes or whatever it might be, to retool, repurpose? You also said that, to the best you can, you try to stay away from the larger market out there. Good for you, because at the end of the day, the only way we make it a better country is we go local. Because since when did the United States government or its agencies or its advocates during those agencies, the technocrats or the Council on Foreign Relations or the Bilderberg Group or the Trilateral Commission or the Business Roundtable or the National Department of Commerce and care about your local community? I come from Appalachia. It has been devastated. Not that we should have coal. We should not have coal, but they should have transitioned, re-educated the people, and repurposed people so they could go from one stage of life and one series of crafts and skills they had mastered for decades that were dangerous and deadly, brown lung, black lung, into ones like making solar or renewables or something, agriculture with hydroponics. They chose not to. They simply closed it down and outsourced it somewhere else where it made more profit. So as a result, all across America, we have rust towns. We have vacant buildings. And that's not because local people mismanaged it. The only thing local people did wrong is they trusted Washington and the bureaucracies or the state legislators who can be bought and sold for peanuts through ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council's influence on them, or others. When you think locally, make sure you're aware that local is where the problems are solved. The problems are not going to be solved by a Marshall Plan to clean up the environment. All you're going to get is Greta Thunberg coming across and motivating us all, and rightly so, and telling us the truth, which she did 100%, but behind her is an entire industry of the most powerful people in the world, including George Soros, including Bill and Melinda Gates, including some of the most powerful people in the world who want you to spend that money, trillions of dollars, on the environment, but cap and trade and carbon capturing and making money, or in a specific way. If it's Al Gore's solar company, yeah, then Al Gore's solar company. So you see, no matter how you turn, you're hit by vulture capitalists who have no ethics whatsoever. Power and money is all they care about, and they don't care about local America. They don't even care about New York City or Los Angeles. Look at it. You have this dystonian reality in gentrified neighborhoods, and you have a utopian sense of oases where you have million, multi-million, $100 million apartments right beside housing projects. There's no sense of community. There's no sense of the common. There's no sense of, can we equalize this so that we all benefit? People who are in Wall Street aren't interested in benefiting other people. Themselves and the people that they have to be responsible for, yes. Thank you, Jim. I appreciate it. Before we go to Gerald Salanti, one more call. Chris from Queens. Chris, your turn.
Good afternoon, Gary. I tuned in a little late, but I heard the clip that you played regarding George Soros, and I just couldn't miss the opportunity because he is such a virus in my gut. George Soros played a very important role, as it turned out, in the former Yugoslavia before they actually got into this entire civil war. And, he funded all of the different, I think it was Macedonia in the former Yugoslavia, not in Greece. The point that I want to make is this isn't a very amoral person. He's totally unethical for one reason. He went and he gave money to that country before a lot of those countries had declared their independence to help them, even though they made a claim on a lot of cultural property that belonged to Greece. Now, I happen to know that because I have a Greek background. And, of course, I remember this. And I remember reading an article at that time. I believe it was in Time Magazine or Nation or Harper's, one of those magazines. But it was a legitimate magazine. They had a five-page article on him. And in that article, he actually expressed exactly what you played. And he said about him making money, that he just cares about making money. But it also there was a statement that he made something to the effect that I'm paraphrasing now because I don't remember the words exactly, that you know, what he wanted to do was to influence and change a lot of the political things in the world. Now, so as far as your first caller goes, when he says he can understand it, I would allow his position and I would accept it, even though I totally disagree with it. But for one thing, George Soros has injected himself intentionally in a lot of these movements, except you never hear of his name. It wasn't just about the former Yugoslavia. He almost sank the British sterling years ago. He would bet on money, and I've repeatedly read about this. He would bet on something, and he would pick the position knowing full well what it was, but then he would encourage the others to bet on the opposite side. This is what he does. You know, he's like a virus that has kind of jumped in there and found a niche in your body that will never go away. I don't mean to be dramatic about it, but I feel very strongly because he does represent a lot of what goes on in this society here in America since we live in here. And he gets away with it without any credit for it. You know, he also funds that MoveOn.org, which is supposed to be very much on the Democrat side, and others. I mean, I could go on and on. But I would love if you would just one last thing.
Sorry, Chris, but Gerald Salonta, you made several good points. He is, you said, a virus that can't get rid of. He's congenital to the body politic in the United States, in my opinion. Let's go over and say hello to Gerald Salonta, who's been patiently waiting. Thank you very much, Gerald, for coming on to share your end-of-year trends for 2020. I gave your bio a little earlier. So I'm going to let you take it from here and talk about what you see happening worldwide. I see uprisings and revolutions are sweeping the world. It's out of control. So what's next? From South America to Africa, from the Middle East to Asia and Europe, millions are taken to the streets across the globe in numbers never seen before, and we're taking to no streets in the United States. So tell us about what you see coming in the next 12 months.
Well, on the what you just talked about is the new world disorder. This is my 40th year of trend forecasting, and I've never seen anything like this. And listening, you know, to the other callers and things that are going on, when we talk about, for example, with vaccines and what they're pushing through. Regardless of the agency, whether it's the CDC, the EPA, the FTC, the FCC, the FDA, it's one big FU you know what. Because these aren't agencies. People in this country haven't grown up yet. We're talking about all of these movements going on around the world, and there is absolutely minimal, if anything, blowback in America about how our government isn't a democratic government at all, but it's run by two gangs. I call them the Dumocrats and the Repulsivekins. And a guy that was the assistant to the secretary of the New York State Senate ran major campaigns in Westchester County, including the mayoral campaign in Yonkers at a graduate school in 1971. And have been with presidents, prime ministers, and princes. I know what the deal looks like. And in America, anyone that, to me, supports either of the two parties, save your political crap and shove it. I don't want to smell it. I don't want it near me. Because how can any self-respecting human being look up to this criminal gang that they call Democrats and Republicans and fight over who they're going to vote for, which leader of the gang is going to come next? So in America, there's no fight back. But if you go to, France, I mean, that's really a backward place, isn't it? And what are they on now? 3 weeks going on of strikes because Macron, the president over there, wants to shaft them out of retirement money as they give more to the rich. And that's what all these movements are about. It's about income inequality. It's about government corruption. It's about poverty. It's Lebanon, it's Guinea, it's Zimbabwe, it's Hong Kong, it's Chile, it's Ecuador, Peru, Colombia, Bolivia, Sudan, Iraq, Algeria, one country after another, but not in the United States. There's no fight here. So anybody that calls the money that these people get campaign contributions, grow up. It's called bribes and payoffs, and they're the ones that are making the rules and regulations that are running and ruining our lives. So there's a whole new world disorder, but it's out of America's news. And, hey, how about the impeachment? Did you hear about the impeachment? What about the impeachment? Hey, did you hear about the couple that from America that died near a volcano in New Zealand? I mean, yeah, it's just terrible it happened, but that's not news. But that's American news. So we're not prepared for the future because all these movements I talked about, Gary, name me one leader. They're independent movements. And that's what the future is. It's independence. To be who we want to be without being given orders by the hierarchy. But America, it's not happening here, so it's going to be a while. On the economic front in 2020, it's going to continue. I mean, I've been on your show many, many years, and I thought way back when it would crash again after the panic of 08. But they didn't teach me about negative zero interest rate policy, the Federal Reserve already dumping in over $3 trillion into the repo overnight markets so the gamblers could gamble the next day on Wall Street, $3 trillion since September 17th, and have now said they're going to dump in another $2.93 trillion, they can't say $3 trillion, between December 16th and January 18th. And then with the presidential reality show of 2020, Trump is going to do everything he can to bring interest rates lower, and that will artificially prop up the economy.
What do you see happening? I don't see anything major happening with our economy for the next year, but then in 2021, I see the bubbles beginning to burst. I see a cumulative debt on the low end of $72 trillion, at the high end, $232 trillion, if you add in unfunded entitlements. And that's what's going to start hitting us, along with what's going to be happening in Europe, where their economy is going to be suffering as well, which it is now.
Oh, yes, I agree. Matter of fact, our forecast is the greatest depression, 2021. Trump is going to be the Herbert Hoover of 2021. They're running out of monetary methadone. That's all this is. These are addicts. And if anybody knows the people that gamble on Wall Street and the people that you're talking about, they're addicts. They can never get enough. They can never get enough. And just like any addict, they'll do anything. And this is all this is monetary methadone. It's all made up stuff. They didn't teach you about in Economics 101 about negative and zero interest rate policy or about, quote, quantitative easing. Negative yield bond yields. Oh, yeah, you know, Gary, no, you're a great guy. I've been on your show. I got this 30-year bond here. I want to sell it to you. And in 30 years, because you're such a great guy, I'm going to give you back less than what you loaned me. You can't make this stuff up. Yes, you can if you're a criminal group. And that's what this is. The banksters are running and ruining our nation and other countries around the world.
Finally, give us your thought about what you see the influence of China and some of the other countries aligned with China doing to the economy in the next 12 months.
Yeah, I was just on China TV, one of their shows out of Hong Kong, and I said to them, the 20th century was the American century. The 21st century is going to be the Chinese century. As far as Hong Kong, they're going to put it down any way they can and do it when they want. I said, the business of China is business. The business of America is war. Oh, yeah, just passed the budget, right? Democrats and Republicans, House, Senate, only what? In the House, only 48 people voted against it, the biggest defense budget in history. So that's what's going on. We're wasting our money. They're not wasting it. It's murderous money, killing innocent people in foreign countries, while China's buying up the world, whether they're ports, whether they're doing the Belt and Road Initiative. And in Hong Kong, again, the people there are fighting for their lives because they know what life is going to be like under China. And the people that they can't stand doing business with, people from Hong Kong, and of course they're Chinese by descent, but it's a different place because the British colonized it after all those years, and they don't want to be under the realm of the communist Chinese, but they're not going to have any choice at the end. China's going to do what they want to do. But the only reason they're holding back right now is concern over the equity markets in Hong Kong being the hub, the financial hub of Asia.
One last thing. We have allowed no criticism of Saudi Arabia for its financing of 9/11 terrorist attack, for the assassination of Khashoggi and cutting him up in pieces on direct orders, according to CIA, from the Crown Prince, from his starting a war in Yemen, and we supporting him during that, and it's become the worst humanitarian disaster in the world. And so we let all this pass, including him funding terrorist groups, and here the Chinese have detention camps for Muslims, the Uyghurs. They have them in detention camps or let them work, but only under almost slave-like conditions, and not a word against them by corporations who are doing business in their country. What does it say about us at the moral level?
Well, let's go back to China, right? Those communist Chinese, those lousy commies. Remember, this is when you talk about the education system, to say how moronic it is in this country, because if it was any good, we'd be not be in the problems we were in. Remember they had us hiding under desks in case an atom bomb went off? Adults, teachers, right? Oh, yeah, I passed the test. I'm a teacher. Having kids hide under desks in case an atom bomb went off. Oh, and don't look at the flash. You'll be dust in seconds. I'm saying this because going back to what's going on and where we're going, it's only going to go downhill from here. There is no future in this country under the current systems. The only way we're going to break free is to break free of both the Republican and Democratic parties and have direct democracy where the people vote. Otherwise, it's a waste of time. So the other part of your question you asked me, I'm sorry, I went off a little bit on that.
It's all right. We're out of time. Gerald, you made your points. It's going to be on us as individuals and groups working together to make it a better world, to go local and stop trusting either party or the politicians or the technocrats or the agencies of those technocrats or the mainstream media. We've got to just turn it off because it does not serve our interest, and that's why we're not in the streets where we should be protesting to make change. Gerald Celante, thank you very much. We look forward to our next conversation.
And thank you, and thanks for all you do, and Happy New Year.
And Gerald's program, which is one of the most popular on PRN, can be heard every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network. We're out of time, everyone. By the way, one last thing. Chris Hedges is going to be joining me on Saturday at noon talking about poverty, how it manifests and how we can overcome it, and how we, no matter how secure we think we are, and that it'll never happen to us, it is happening to us, and it can happen. So learn how to help others, but also how not to get into that situation yourself. Go to prn.fm and join me for a webinar this Saturday on poverty, how to prevent it, how to help those who are poor, and how to understand the issue. Chris Hedges will be my guest. Have a nice day, everyone.
When the sun beats down and burns the tar up on the roof, and your shoes get so hot you wish your tired feet were fireproof, under